Thank you very much. And do you hear me, by the way? I'd like to thank the organizer who actually gave me an assignment to present a talk about the vision of integrability theory from the point of the string theory. And so I've tried to put some thoughts which I have in this respect. And that's why I'm using outdated technology. So, so that's a brief outline. So in the beginning, I'll give introduction to the short introduction to, into the, for those who doesn't know what is it. And that part should be clear to everyone. And the rest will be more specific questions related to algebraic analytic structures, and particularly their relation to thermodynamic beta ansatz, which has been discussed in length on the previous days. And I think I have something to say which was not pronounced before. When we specifically discuss different properties, or better, lack of thereof, in the solution of the Young-Baxter equation associated with ADS-CFT, and we come on to hidden 3D structures in two-dimensional integrable models. Well, there are many ways to introduce the Young-Baxter equation, and for me, the simplest would be to consider a model of statistical mechanics or mechanics on some two-dimensional lattice, for example, a square lattice. But actually, we don't need to have a square lattice. What we need to have is oriented graph of valency 4. And so on this, something like this, where each vertex has is intersection of two oriented lines. And on the edge of this graph, we put what is called spin variables, which is integers which take numbers, take values in some set, for example, from 1 to n. And to each vertex of this lattice, we assign a set of numbers, which are called local Boltzmann weights. So, and what we are interested is the partition function, which is defined as a sum over all spin configurations of the lattice over the product of the local Boltzmann weights. Of course, these indices here depends on the position, but everybody understands what it means, not to make notation messy, so that you have to multiply all the Boltzmann weights and sum over the configuration of spins. So it's extremely convenient when we discuss various relations in this area to use what is called some kind of diagrammatic rules, graphical notation, what I call geometric multiplication. So if you have a graph, for example, a graph like that, and that means that we have to multiply the Boltzmann weights associated with the vertex and perform summation over all internal edges, over the spin variable on internal edges, while the external spins on kept fixed. So that's the rule. So the that means the partition function is just, in our notation, is just this graph. So So, and the other thing is, it's convenient to assume that all these Boltzmann weights are different for different vertices, so they number them by the number of lines. So if it is on the intersection of line 1 and 2, that is, means R1, 2. So now we make a non-trivial statement, which is called Jahn-Baxter equation, which is nothing but as a equality of the partition functions for two simple triangles. So if we calculate the partition function of this graph, they coincide. That's the requirement that on these Boltzmann weights. And so in the left-hand side, I wrote down explicitly what does it mean, but it's obvious how to proceed. So another convenient way to think about this four-index tensor R as a matrix element of some particular linear operator acting in a product of two n-dimensional vector space. And so then when we can rewrite this equation in matrix notation, where each operator, say R1, 2, they all act in three vector space in the direct product of three vector spaces, but non-trivially on the first and second, first and third, and so on. So, and most of the talk, or the first half of the talk, we will be talking about special case where these Boltzmann weights are functions on the difference of two continuous variables placed on the lines. So R12 is a function of R, U1 minus U2, and so on. That property called difference property. So there are another important properties we want to impose, which are called crossing symmetry and unitarity. It will be shown on the next slide. But perhaps most people are familiar with that, so I won't elaborate on this. Unitarity is here. If R12 and R21 is 1, and graphically that can be represented by this diagram. Now, from the definition we made, yes? There's no particles. Oh, meaning of crossing, I explained. So when you formulate a model on a two-dimensional lattice, if you think that the orientation of the light is something artificial, you may think that the definition should not depend on the orientation of the lines. So if you change of orientation of one line, you effectively will be looking to the same vertex from the different angle, and you should get the same result. So in that case, crossing symmetry is just a consistency condition for the definition. For example, if you have square lattice, model on the square lattice, we can look at the lattice from one side or rotate it 90 degrees and get the same result. That's what meaning of the crossing from the point of view of statistical mechanics. Basically, the invariance with the respect to the rotation to the 90 degree rotation. So, what I've said is enough to formulate an extremely important property which encodes all the essence of integrability. That is called It's called by Baxter. It's called by Z-invariance. Well, I asked him why it is Z-invariance, and he said that the partition function is invariant, but for every invariance, partition function is invariant, and probably he also had in mind that Z is a last letter of the alphabet. So if we take a graph like that, calculate a partition function, the properties that I formulated is enough easily to prove that it doesn't depend on the arrangement of the lattice. It depends only a permutation. So that if we number the lines at the bottom and they come to the top in different order, that and the variables, which I from now on call rapidity variables on each line. So it's a function of these two things. So if somebody gave us a partition function, there is no way we can say which lattice it was. Because if we move, so it has, suppose we have that line here, and now we erase it from here and put it here. So if we move it continuously, and every stage we'll be making either this move or the Young-Baxter equation move, so nothing will change. So we don't know which lattice is it, and so from the point of view of partition function, the lattice is not fixed. A particular consequence of this property is what is usually associated with integrability. It is commutativity of the transfer matrices, which are associated with the that graph. We have one loop and number of lines which has external spin. They are fixed. They are considered as a matrix element of the big matrix. And, well, all these parameters are implicit, and the only parameter we are interested on is which on this looped line. So it's a kind of trace of some product of matrices. So, and if we stick these two together using the moves I described, we can move loop from behind to the top and show that these operators are commuting. So, what do you know about the solutions of the Young-Baxter equation? Well, it's obvious that in the setting, which is not the most general setting, in the setting I've just described, it is an overdetermined system of algebraic equation. We have n to the power 6 equation, because n external spins, for three multiplied by n to the fourth unknowns, so much highly overdetermined system. And actually, we don't know for sure a general solution, even for when n equal 2. So there's a, seemingly it's a simple problem. We just put it on the computer and start to exclude variable, but very soon the problem become untractable. Once we exclude the variables, the expression grow and grow, they factorize, all the resultants and determinants factorize. We have to study infinite number of possibilities which lead to nowhere, and that is nobody succeeded, despite, I think, quite enormous efforts to get a solution in a straightforward way. So what we have instead is a set of recipes, like cook like me, and you'll got something which solve Young-Baxter equation. So one most powerful recipe comes from the theory of quantum groups, and I'll give an example, important example, associated with this quantum Kac-Moody algebra, which is called also universal enveloping algebra, affine algebra UQSL2 hat. Hat means it is affine algebra, and which is generated by these elements, which is Cartan-Weyl generator, subject to these commutation relations, plus some fourth order Serre relation. I don't want to, well, they're quite complicated. But if you want, you can find easily them to the literature. So that enveloping algebra is just free algebra, all these products of these generators subject to this commutation relation. So it's infinite dimensional algebra. Okay, so one important property of this algebra is that it is so-called quasi-triangular Hopf algebra. That means that there exists a co-multiplication, which is a map from the algebra to its tensor square, which is given by this formula. So if you substitute these images to all these relations, they all be satisfied. So that's what we need to develop representation theory, and in particular to answer the question what decomposition of the product of representations. And the word quasi-triangular means that there is exist a unique element in, called a universal R matrix, which belong to the direct product of two algebra, and actually belongs to the direct product of two Borel subalgebras, which is Borel subalgebras of our algebra, which is generated by these generators. We include Cartan part in both of them, and which intertwine this co-multiplication. And by definition, this R matrix satisfies the Young-Baxter equation. So it is an element which is, belongs to the product. It's algebraic element, abstract algebraic element. So that means if we substitute that abstract algebraic element to the Young-Baxter equation, start to use all commutation relation, everything we could, we can prove that this equation is satisfied without even talking about any representations of this algebra. That is why it is called universal R matrix. So actually, there is you can find statements in the literature. There is there exists an explicit expression. Well, it's not really explicit. It's some algorithmic procedure how to calculate this expression. But the good news that for most important cases, when we want to specialize this R matrix, we can evaluate this expression. So actually, from point of view of physical applications, we never need an algebraic element. It's no use. For physics, we need number, something we can take a trace of. We need a matrix. And so we have to evaluate this expression for application by choosing some particular matrix representation or any representation of this algebra in a space we understand from the physical point of view. So the good news is actually the if you look carefully on this formula, and analyze a look at this, so the both left and right hand side of the equation are element only b plus a and b minus. We don't need to know realization of this algebra in all three factors to get the solution of the Young-Baxter equation. So we can escape by dealing with Borel subalgebras for two factors, which is a great relief, because Borel subalgebra is much simpler algebra, and it's much easier to get a representation of the Borel subalgebra of this affine algebra rather than the whole algebra itself. So there are two kind of representations we will be talking, and that is first of all called evaluation representation. That means they are constructed as a first, we construct a homomorphism, algebra homomorphism from this infinite dimensional algebra to a finite dimensional algebra, denoted this, which is just a Q deformation of the usual algebra SL2. I'll show what is it on the next slide. And second kind of representation is the representation based on the homomorphism into Heisenberg algebra, or more precisely, deformed Heisenberg algebra, which is sometimes called Q oscillator. That is a very simple algebra, and actually it has two representations. Only two infinite dimensional Fock spaces, which is its highest and lowest weight, depending on what we call creation operator and annihilation operator, that will be two representations. So let's see what happens if we use this knowledge and what we obtain. So first kind of representation. So that is a definition of finite dimensional algebra. It is spent on three elements, E, F, and H, with this commutation relation. And that is a homomorphism from a big algebra to this finite dimensional algebra. So what we have here, we have a lambda, arbitrary complex number, which is called spectral parameter. And if you substitute this into the defining relation of the algebra, use commutation relation of a small algebra, we can easily check that everything is satisfied. So we got an algebra homomorphism. We haven't got yet a representation. But whatever representation we can find for small algebra will fit. So we reduced the problem of construction of representation of affine algebra to this finite dimensional algebra. And fortunately, we know representation theory of this simple algebra very well. And particular representation we need to pay attention to today is the 2j plus 1 dimensional representation, standard spin representation of this SL2 algebra with half integer spin. And all the representation matrices is just deformation of the matrices, slight deformation of the matrices of a classical theory where we have letter Q appear in the formula. It's a Q. Parameter Q here. So also the what we need is a highest weight representation without infinite dimensional, with no condition. It's basically the same formula, but there is no truncation condition. So the same formula, but where J is a arbitrary complex number. And an interesting feature which appears in quantum case when Q is a root of unity. So that is basically classical theory at the same with Q or without Q. But Q root of unity has no, by the way, Q equal to 1 goes back, leads us back to classical case. Okay. And from the point of view of affine algebra, Q going to 1 and minus 1 will lead us in general to Jungian, which is a kind of quantum group, but which appear as a in the limit Q equal plus minus 1. So then we have special representation and dimensional, which depend on this power, which doesn't have either highest or lowest weight. And another type, more simple representation based on this map from Borel subalgebra into Q oscillator algebra, which is very similar to usual oscillator algebra. But we have letter Q here. Okay, so if we do replacement like this, plug it into the defining relation of the Borel subalgebra, easily verify that everything is satisfied. So now I think we defined enough to discuss functional relation for the transfer matrix. So that is universal matrix, and we want to evaluate it for particular representations. For example, if you take so lambda here means that evaluation map has parameter lambda. When we take representation with spin J, another evaluation map in the second space has parameter mu, spectral parameter mu, and we take spin J prime. And fortunately, we can evaluate this complicated expression, which, and in particular, R 1/2 1/2 is a standard R matrix of the 6-vertex model. So in the spirit of universal R matrix, let's define a universal transfer matrix or universal T operator. So consider this diagram, which we had before. Associate universal R matrix with every node here. Do not specify a representation. Leave it as an element of the algebra on vertical line. But for the only horizontal line we have, we choose some particular representation, P, and also made a small modification because we will be dealing with infinite-dimensional representation to put a simple factor inside this trace, inside this summation, which is exponential of the Cartan element with some arbitrary parameter P. A field, a twist factor. P is a twist. Okay? We need that to deal with convergence of the sum for infinite dimensional representations. But it doesn't harm. So this universal T operator, an element of this Borel subalgebra, because the second factor belongs to Borel subalgebra. Okay? And we develop special notation, Tj, when this P is finite dimensional spin representation of the dimension 2j plus 1. Ej plus, that means it's infinite dimensional highest weight representation with arbitrary weight j. And q plus minus for two representation, the only two representation we can construct with Q oscillator algebra. Okay. So now we want to to study algebra of transfer matrices. We want to multiply these loops going in vertical direction. And typical problem we need to solve is to understand what would be what will happen with this diagram. So here we'll have two different representations, and here we have algebraic elements, and this representation depends on a spectral parameter, and the fact of life is that for generic position of this spectral parameter, the product of these two representations is irreducible, not reducible from the point of view of fine algebra. But for special relation on spectral parameter, if you write this down as a matrix of the dimension P1 multiplied by dimension P2, that matrix reduced to a Bloch triangle form. And because we have a summation inside the loop, which is equivalent to trace, we don't care about this star here, and we'll got two terms, usually two terms for the answer. So, actually, it's nice and you can imagine that we have many representations and we actually want to multiply everything with everything and see what's to happen. But fortunately, we have to do only one calculation. We have to multiply infinite dimensional representation associated with Q plus, Q oscillator by Q minus. Infinity by infinity is infinity square. Okay, so this matrix will be infinity square, but it will reduce to the Bloch triangular form with infinite dimensional blocks. And inside these blocks, we'll see infinite dimensional highest value representation with label J. So the T operator corresponding to infinite dimensional Verman module factorizes in product. Spin label J dilute into the spectral parameter. Pay attention to this very important property. If everything is done properly in an integrable system, that should always happen. So when we get down to basic element, all spin labels should disappear and be replaced by spectral parameters. So now, so that is infinite dimensional matrix, but when J is half integer, we know that infinite dimensional representation is reducible. It has a finite dimensional 2J plus 1 dimensional block. And the rest is actually infinite dimensional representation, which is of the same form. So, well, that is called BGG resolution, Bernstein-Gelfand-Gelfand resolution, and that formula exists for all other algebras. So if you substitute this equation here, we got an expression for all finite dimensional transfer matrices in terms of Q plus and Q minus. All theory is constructed. So, for example, if by definition, T0 is correspond to one-dimensional representation is trivial. Up to normalization is just one. So that gives an identity between Q plus, Q minus. If we use this identity and evaluate this sum, we can, in two lines or two free lines, derive Baxter equation. So we can also derive all other equations. People know in this context this fusion equation and make a change of variable and rewrite it as a Y system, what is called Y system. Now we're getting closer to thermodynamic wet answers. And so that is the setting That is a cylinder, which we have seen a lot of nice pictures this week of cylinders. So there's the drawing is not that good. So the L lines here, the dimension or diameter, the circumference of the cylinder is L, and the this length of, not the cylinder, is a very large torus. So large, so it doesn't fit the transparency here. So, but that is the size of the torus in that direction. And obviously, the partition function is a trace of this transfer matrix associated with this loop to the power m is the same of the trace of another transfer matrix associated with a long loop in the power l here. And this is a finite volume site, and it is called TBA site. And the equation we wrote here, so when L goes to infinity, there is only one ground state remain here, but... well, we can study any excitation here. So what I want to emphasize, the equations are exact. They're exact for finite L, either for lattice or field theory context, that doesn't depend. So the equations are exact. They're universal for lattice and field theory. And the only non-universality which I didn't tell you, so when we evaluate the universal matrix for particular representation, there are factors, some simple factors in front of the, which change the normalization of the R matrix, number R matrix, with respect to the standard normalization where it is entire function of the spirit parameter. So if you take into account all these factors, they appear as multiplier in this relation to all these non-universal factors. You have to do that calculation. If you have spin 1/2 magnetic or spin 3 magnetic, that is a different factor. But that is traceable thing, and all universal things do not change. The structure do not change. So we don't need to make any conjectures to derive these relations. And in particular, if we write this difference equation like in a form of integral equations, we know the driving term is just the free energy, basically partition function per site. We need to calculate it, so to put this in the driving term. So it will be a leading term, and the integral terms should vanish when L goes to infinity. And if we look, say, for the lattice model where L is integer, usually that function F is entire function that is important to have. And for integer L, the analytic property of the all transfer matrices will be very simple. And that could be maintained with this TBA system. I just want to remark that this mirror transfer matrix is not the same e to the minus beta h. Generally, if you try to calculate the trace of minus beta h, then analytic property of the Y system will be could be extremely complicated. Now, the one thing which is written here, but TBA strings, string conjecture, which is describe part types of string we need to take into account into TBA. On the TBA side, here is not required. It's just strings correspond to representations of quantum group. In this case, they correspond to finite dimensional representation. So we're now moving to the last part. So that will be not as consistent as discussion before, but I want to give some thoughts about the absence of difference property in the S matrices, R matrices, which appear in ADS CFT. And the known cases, which I know very well myself, where the non-difference property occur is when we deal with cyclic representation, we are specific to quantum groups at roots of unity. Q equal 1 is also root of unity. When we consider quantum systems on a classical background, for example, background field theory, we quantize soliton solution, and in principle, we can formulate that in a lattice model. And when we have explicit hidden three-dimensional structure, which I'll explain what is it, and all of them are related. So the first case, cyclic representation. When Q is a root of unity, the nth power of this generator of QSL2 are central elements. For finite dimensional, for highest weight representation, they are nilpotent elements. No, these are central elements. They're actually proportional to unit operator. And so together, which give two extra variables, and together with the spectral parameter, they make two spectral parameter and a module of the curve. So the spectral parameter in this case lie on a curve of the high genus n minus squared. And if you evaluate the R matrices, which correspond to two cyclic representation, it will depend on two pair of spectral parameters, and there will be no difference properties of the R matrix. But if we evaluate this R matrix, there will be difference properties. So the algebraic curve arises when we try to intertwine two cyclic representations with central charge. If you don't try to do that, the algebraic curve doesn't arise. So I just give a general idea what I mean here. So actually, we can think of lattice models which are not homogeneous, but where the Boltzmann weight depend on some classical solution, on some, like in field theory, depend on some background solution. And one example I know, and which is related, and actually it's my previous work with the next speaker back maybe 10 years ago, it's related to so-called Hirota equations, which is, so that's our two lines of the lattice. On the dual lattice, we put additional variables, which are classical, and which satisfy this finite difference equation. So this up, down, left, right. It's a second order. It's like Laplace equation, a second order difference equation. And so we have to solve this equation first, and that is an integrable equation. And when Boltzmann weight will depend on the solution. So if, for example, in this setting, we take some trivial constant solution, which doesn't really change in the space, we'll get again the same chiral Potts model with algebraic curve, which I mentioned before. And it's curious to note that the same Hirota equation arises of central charges for SU2 to R matrix as written in these papers. And last thing I want to discuss is the, quite briefly, before we may move to conclusion, is 3D structure. So what I mean by 3D structure? So there exists a generalization of the Young-Baxter equation to three dimensions. That is called the Molotikov tetrahedron equation. And in the spirit of our graphical notations, and can be represented as an equivalence of two tetrahedra, and with the same convention, so this equation for linear operators in six vector spaces, and if we multiply these operators in this order and this order, that is obviously some kind of algebraic relation. And again, all these R's are different. And that's a notation. So what's the consequence of that? A consequence of that is that if we have a single solution of the tetrahedron equation, we can get an infinite number of solution of Young-Baxter equation. How it works? So consider this diagram, which is made of three-dimensional R matrices. Close that loop and make a sum over this loop. Okay. Now, project it to like here on the plane. So all these labels here, spin labels here, will look like one big vector label. So we see that we can interpret this thing as a Boltzmann weights of two-dimensional model with multi-spins, where spin variables just take many, many more positions. And the Young-Baxter equation will be consequence of tetrahedron relation. I don't have time to explain this, but that's trivial. So that is just proved by movement of the lines. Okay, so, and actually the known model without difference property, the most famous of them is the so-called Carl Potts model, on which Baxter is working for a couple of decades. It has a three-dimensional structure. It is a two-layer three-dimensional model with two layers. And another example is another solution of the tetrahedron equation, which gives all R matrices for quantum group, this quantum group, for every n. N become the third dimension of the lattice. And the Shastri R matrix also has some three-dimensional structure, which I didn't actually completely understood. There is a paper of Vadati with somebody, I forgot, was the second of several papers where that is discussed. And one point I want to make, that the spectral parameter and moduli are mixed together when we look from the point of three dimension. So in three dimension, only spectral, everything is only spectral parameters, and moduli appear as a subset of three-dimensional spectral parameters. So now we move to conclusion. And I want to reiterate some questions which I pose. And actually, I was thinking about problem of algebraic problem which arises in the context of this idea of CFT for many years. And actually, probably the organizers expect me to be an expert on integrable system, and usually they ask me all kinds of questions, how to do that, what do you think about this, what do you think about that, how. And it is supposed that I have to fix all the problems, and but then really tell what they are going to do. And actually it didn't work. didn't work this way for 6 years. It resembles me a story about a doctor who need to treat Japanese emperor's wife, and he's not allowed to see the patient and examine, even to see the patient, but the only information which can be obtained is from the movement of the thread attached to the wrist of the emperoress sitting in the other room. So that a kind of situation here. So that after many years of study, I formulate things which is, I think, important, and we need to understand what's the meaning of that invariance. Nobody really understands. So if you think about field theory or whatever, partition function, what's the meaning of this disappearance of lattice or any geometric structure in the definition? So I just want to emphasize the functional equation leads to Tuba without any string conjectures. For Q root of unity, the number of different representations is finite, so the number of strings can be truncated and regularized, which simplify the TBAX system. So there are questions of a question how to include R matrices, in particular SU2, 16 by 16 slash 2 R matrix into the scheme of quantum groups, which from my point of view, it is not, has not been done. And a particular deficiency, which I don't understand, is why they're missing spectral parameters. So from the general point of view, non-highest weight representations should give two spectral parameters, not one. And, are there any new solution of the tetrahedron equation which behind their safety? Well, thank you very much.
You said that strings correspond to representation of the algebra. Can you precise the meaning of the word corresponds?
Yes, of course. In the Y system, every Y corresponds to a particular string type. In our notation, every Y corresponds to a particular representation.
I mean, that's for me, some empirical observation. Yes, it is. They correspond. I mean, empirically, they all correspond. But is it somehow proof or?
There can be no proof because string conjectures are conjectures.
And okay, so actually, functional equations. This representation theory give you functional equations. But if you want to write integral equations, I
think that's mathematics. You have to know the leading the free energy in a large volume when L goes to infinity. That you need to calculate.
Yeah, but then you need strings probably.
No, so that's it. So that part is like mathematical theorem. If you have functional equation, you fix analytic property, you can convert them to the integral equation. No, there is no mystery here.
Yeah, so the question is about analytical properties. They contain strings, I think.
The analytic property is a difficult question, but when you come from the lattice theory side and you work with specific R matrices, they are obvious. They follow from analytic property of the R matrices, and you don't have to guess. But from the point of a thermodynamic beta ansatz. If you make a wrong driving term, for example, calculate, put something with the poles there, some cotangents or whatever, and if you exponentiate cotangents, you can imagine what kind of... there should be a logarithm of entire function, something simple, or entire function. Entire function, driving term should be either entire function or logarithm of entire function. But if it's something rhomborhic function, that's a problem.
Thank you.
Have you ever seen a Y system defined on an infinite genus Riemann surface?
Yes.
Can you give an example?
Well, that will arise in Kirov-Potts model. Because there will be, you see that for finite, what happens in the lattice model usually, for example, eight vertex model, which is the model for finite number of sides is defined on an elliptic curve, and everything is entire or meromorphic function on the curve, whatever you calculate. But when you take the thermodynamic limit, and you need to know do that to evaluate the driving term. So the driving term is not a function on the torus anyway anymore. It's a function on the universal covering. So if you have a more complicated curve, usually that will be infinite genus curve, that universal.
What about Hubbard model?
I don't know.
Vladimir, so in the Chassé-R metrics, you can write, though it's not of the difference property, you can write part of it as difference and part of it as a sum of functions. Do you understand that on your three-dimensional picture that you just mentioned?
No, I don't... I do not understand that clearly, and that is something to do. Actually, if anyone wants to collaborate on or any of these problems, you're welcome. So, I am available.
What is the meaning of the second spectral parameter in SU2/2 model in QD form?
I don't know. What I'm saying, other cases where non-difference property occur, we have usually a representation which contains two spectral parameters. Somehow, what I've been explained by Gleb and Sergei, that somehow the spectral parameter which comes from affine algebra need to be set to 1, and so effectively it disappeared. I don't understand that. That means we deal with something not generic. So in generic situation, no parameters should disappear.
And if you boil it down to Hubbard model, which is the subpart of SE2/2, do you still expect to have two spectral parameters?
Yes, I expect to have two, but I didn't see them.
Okay.
No more questions. So let's thank the speaker again.